live and direct from the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Hey, 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 welcome to the weekend, Americans, Canadians, and people of a foreign persuasion. I'm Radical Russ Belville, your host here for 2 hours of radical progressive talk. Sit back and relax and join us here as we discuss what's going on here in this great free speech zone that we call America. We're so glad to have you here. We got plenty to talk about today, and if you want to get involved in the conversation, the phone number is 888-7-RADICAL. 888-7-RADICAL. We'll be taking your calls in the second hour and also in our first hour. Great guest we've got coming on here today. You might want to call in and talk to him too. Salim Siddiqui from HotConflict.com will be here to help us sort out what's going on between Israel and the Gaza Strip in Palestine there. So stay tuned for that. We'll be taking your calls for Salim in the second half of this hour at 888-7-RADICAL. Also, coming up, we've, of course, got our Lunatic Fringe Awards. Oh, boy, they were off for a week, but the right-wingers are back out in force. It's going to be an all-star Lunatic Fringe coming up at the bottom of the hour. And in our second hour, a look at living in America. And why in the world does Barack Obama think he needs to compromise with the Republicans? Why in the world would you compromise with a failed ideology? All of that coming up here on The Russ Belville Show. But before we get to that, we've got to introduce our good friend, our engineer, the man working in Washington, D.C., taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL, the man from London, a right cheeky boffin who's such a jammy beggar he smacked his own bonce when he learned he'd be spending a dirty weekend with a page threer.
Hey!
It's our own Stevie Webb.
Hello.
Oh, Stevie.
Hello.
Oh, Stevie's a little under the weather, I understand.
I am. I'm just getting over a hideous, hideous disease. But it's given me this lovely, sexy voice.
Oh, yes. It's beautiful.
Whereas for some people, it sounds like it's sexy voice, whereas I just sound like some sort of dreadful pervert.
Speaking of dreadful perverts, yes. Boy, what a perfect segue for this next one here. The news here, and a lot of you folks, if you're new to the show, I'm the Red State Refugee. I'm living here in Portland and broadcasting to you from Portland, Oregon right now, or as H.W. Bush called it, Little Beirut. But I'm originally from Boise, Idaho. So I grew up in Idaho, and my senator was Larry Craig out there in Idaho. Well, the final story, the final link in the Larry Craig saga that took place, you know, going back to a year and a half ago, has finally come to play here.
I saw this. This is great.
Yeah, yeah. Larry Craig, former Senator Larry Craig of Idaho, is finally giving up on his effort to withdraw his guilty plea stemming from this 2007 arrest at the Concourse C of the Minneapolis St. Paul Airport. That's right. After 18 months, the battle's finally over.
Therefore, it is with sadness and deep regret that I announce that it is my intent to resign from the Senate effective September 30th.
Yeah, September 30th.
In doing so...
of last year, or the year before. Yeah. It only took you 18 months, Larry. Good job on that whole resignation thing there. Wow. Boy,
I heard an interesting factoid about that the other day.
Oh, really?
Just brought it back to me here. That the bathroom stall was actually a tourist attraction for quite a while. But visitor numbers have dropped off.
Oh, no.
At the end of this year, yeah.
That's a darn shame.
Isn't that a shame, yeah.
Well, this may be my last opportunity to play it, so I've got to do it. I got to dedicate this one to Larry Craig. Thanks for giving us so much fun over the past year and a half.
Yay. Nasty, bad, naughty boy.
I am not gay.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
There's a new me coming.
Oh, yeah.
I did nothing wrong.
You did nothing wrong. But not going to fight it any longer. So thanks, Larry, for all the fun. We really enjoyed the story.
I heard this voice makes it even better as well. Larry, you bad, naughty boy. Larry, you naughty, naughty man.
Perfect voice for it. I agree. And in another story here, just getting through some of these miscellaneous stories before we talk to Salim Siddiqui coming up in the next segment, Another miscellaneous story I wanted to just bring up here, because I know Stevie was looking forward to hearing this one. According to Sony and MGM, they are reporting that the new James Bond movie, Quantum of Solace, just set the mark as the highest grossing domestic Bond film ever, with $167.1 million, passing the other Daniel Craig film, Casino Royale, that only had $167 million. Quantum of Solace has done $500 million business worldwide.
Wow. I thought I could trust you. You said you weren't motivated by revenge.
I'm motivated by my duty.
So how do you feel about that, Stevie? What good news that is, huh?
Well, there's obviously no accounting for taste, is there?
Obviously not.
Oh, A quantum of Boris. I forgot what it's called. Is that what I've written it down?
It was a little creepy. The other thing about this this Quantum of Solace thing with this Daniel Craig, boy, it's not quite fair to say that it's the highest grossing film, because of course tickets now cost $10. Well, yeah. You know, when Sean Connery was Bond, what did the ticket cost? You know,
$3 and sixpence.
Exactly.
Still working in old money.
Yeah. Now, another entertainment news thing I wanted to bring up here that kind of creeped me out a little bit, because I'm a big fan of this show that's on Showtime called Dexter. I don't know if you've heard of it. Dexter's this show about a serial killer who kills serial killers.
Yes.
And he works for the cops and so on. Anyway, this news came out from USA Today. They said Michael C. Hall, who plays Dexter, and Jennifer Carpenter, who plays his sister on Dexter, are now husband and wife.
Ew.
That's right. Dexter and his sister eloped on New Year's Eve, and they're married now.
Ew. Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
Kind of creepy, huh?
Speaking of that, I watched Star Wars again while I was sick.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I watched, because I had nothing better, nothing at all to do except lie on the sofa. Sure. I watched, like, proper Star Wars, not the Star Wars crimes.
Right.
The recent ones. They don't count. They're
rubbish. No.
Proper Star Wars. And even though I've watched it loads and loads of times, that bit in Empire Strikes Back where Princess Leia says, "Well, just goes to show you don't know everything about women," to Han Solo, and gives Luke a big kiss.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no!
Ooh, that's wrong.
Ooh.
Oh, boy. Well, that's some of the miscellaneous news that's going around these days. Exactly. Some of the strange miscellaneous stories. But, you know, I know that a lot of you are like me, and there's real news stories out there that you don't always have a time to catch up with, the newspaper or the evening news. So, at the top of the Russ Belville Show, I help you catch up on the week's hottest news topics with...
The Week in 90 Seconds.
The Illinois House votes 114-1 to impeach Governor Blagojevich.
I don't believe there's any cloud that hangs over me.
I guess in some places in America, impeachment still is on the table.
The day of the blank check for the president in war is over.
Harry Reid absolutely, positively will not seat Roland Burris... Oh, wait a minute. That's my script from a week ago.
Are you suggesting that there will ultimately be a vote of the entire Senate on whether or not to seat Roland Burris?
I think without any question that will be the case.
Al Franken is officially declared the winner of Norm Coleman's Senate seat.
Because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
500,000 jobs were lost in December, and unemployment is up to 7.2%.
Brother, can you spare a dime?
President-elect Obama adds $300 billion in tax cuts to his economic plan to woo Republican votes.
The situation is getting worse. We've got to act boldly, and we've got to act swiftly.
Obama named CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta as Surgeon General.
We got Michael Moore speechless. That's pretty hard to do here. Yeah.
Under investigation in New Mexico, Governor Bill Richardson bows out of Obama's cabinet.
Mi buen amigo, the next president of the United States, Barack Obama.
The U.S. Senate votes to support Israel's attacks on Gaza, so Joe the Plumber is on the case. Reporting from Israel. Seriously, Joe the Plumber is going to go report from Israel.
I get to go over there and let their average Joes share their story, what they think, how they feel.
So Joe, whose name isn't really Joe, it's Sam, the plumber, who really isn't a plumber, is going to go to Palestine, going to go to Gaza, going to go to Gaza, going to go to Israel, and report as a war correspondent for Pajamas Media. Pajamas TV, there's a right-wing kind of website / TV station group, whatever. Wow. is Is there any more 15 minutes of fame? Is that idea still alive? Isn't his 15 minutes over yet? It's about time that didn't hear any more from Joe the Plumber, and especially something as serious as this situation in Gaza and Israel.
And the new envoy from the UN is going to be Sanjaya from that show where they
from
do
American
the music.
Idol, yeah.
That's right, yes.
No, isn't he the Surgeon General now, Sanjaya?
Oh, no.
Who's next? Judge Judy for the Supreme Court? Come on. What is going on with this? Yeah. But this Gaza-Israel thing, boy, this is going to be our big story for today, the big topic, because coming up in the next break, our next segment, we're going to be speaking with Salim Siddiqui from HotConflict.com, who's an expert on these Middle Eastern affairs. Boy, it's a topic that I'm always reluctant to broach because it seems like here in America, you can't even broach this topic without being considered anti-Semitic unless you completely support everything unquestionably that Israel does. And I've got a problem with that. You know, if you've listened to the show, you know I'm a big proponent of the separation of church and state. And I believe this is one of the reasons why we have this separation of church and state, because we can't criticize Israel without criticizing the religion because of their merging of church and state there. I just have a big problem with it. I want to talk to Salim about this coming up in the next segment. And in the bottom of the hour, we'll also take your calls at 888-7-RADICAL. Your chance to ask some questions of an expert in the Middle East here. I know a lot of you thinking about this situation and what we can do about it. So we'll get to that here coming up in the next segment. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here at the Russ Belville Show. The phone number is 888-7-RADICAL. The website is radicalrus.com. We'll be right back with Salim Siddiqui after these messages.
Russ, the voice of the progressive generation. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back to the show. 22 after the hour. We're still working on getting Salim on the phone lines. Apparently some problems with the phone, but I'll start up the topic here that we're going to be talking about in our big story.
Now it's time for the big story.
My, what a big story.
Thanks. Now here's Radical Russ.
Of course, the big story for today, we're going to talk about this offensive from the Israel into Gaza, in the Gaza Strip. It's quite a complex situation, and I want to talk to you about it here at 888-7-RADICAL. Phone lines are open at 888-772-3422. Boy, I don't even hardly know where to start with this. I mean, it's such a difficult situation. You've got the Gaza Strip, which is this small area of land, about the size of the Detroit metro area. Inside this country, Israel, which is really about the size of about New Jersey or so, and so much violence going on there. We have the militants in Hamas walled up there in Gaza who are lobbing these rockets out into Israel, and they've killed, I think the latest I saw was 5 civilians and 13 soldiers. I could be wrong about the numbers there, but somewhere along those lines. And in retaliation, Israel goes on this offensive where they are bombing from the air these supposed safe houses for Hamas, and killing so many people, killing so many of these civilians. Last report I read was something like 500 civilians dead, and 40% of those being women and children. And so I look at this as an unwinnable situation, and I just don't know where to turn on this. I mean, obviously you cannot have a terrorist group in charge of a landmass there inside your country lobbing rockets at your civilians in their homes. You can't have that. But on the other hand, is a 100-to-1 kill ratio a proportionate response to what's going on there? Really, I mean, you look at these people in Palestine, or Gaza, and some of the poorest people, all crammed together on this little tiny landmass, this little area, this Gaza Strip here, abject poverty, walled off from the rest of Israel, suffering from all sorts of these blockades and keeping the food and medicines from the people. It's just sick. It's just making me sick, this whole situation, and I just don't know what to do to stop it. But what I do know is that we need to talk about it. What I do know is that we need to open up the dialogue on this and to get away from this one-sided support Israel at all costs, support Israel no matter what they do, foreign policy that we've had here in America for the past, 40 years or so. I was looking at some of the polls on this. I wanted to get the pulse of America to find out what people think about this, because this is not the most natural issue for me. I'll be upfront about this. This is not a natural issue for me. Growing up, I didn't even know any Jewish people. I think I met my first Jewish person when I was in high school, maybe senior year. So it's not an issue, this whole issue of anti-Semitism and Jewish culture and Israel. It's not my strongest points here. So that's why I wanted to go to an expert on the issue, and we've got him on the line now. I'm bringing back Salim Siddiqui from HotConflict.com. And Salim, welcome back to the Daily Audio, or welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Russ. You know, it's kind of the same thing. Nobody knows a Muslim either, and so there's this big misunderstanding, and there's a lot of gaps in figuring out what everybody's about, and so that leads to a lot of problems.
Well, let me bring up this this poll that I pulled up. This was from Rasmussen Reports, and what they were doing is trying to measure the American people's opinions on this. And what they found is that the Democratic voters oppose this Israeli offensive by about a 24-point margin, 55% versus 31%. They oppose it. In contrast, the Republicans, they support it about 62-27. And when you look at the whole of the American people, it's about half. It's about 44 on one side, 41% on the other side. So we have a situation where the American people are divided on this. And yet the American leadership, both Republican and Democratic leaders, are unequivocally in lockstep behind supporting Israel's actions here. Do you attribute that to the power of a certain lobby here in America, or just the fear of appearing anti-Semitic? What do you attribute that to, Salim?
Well, I think since 9/11, there's been a general sentiment that we're in a global war on terror, and slowly we've been realizing that many of those issues are local, and there's not really a global issue, and we're seeing little spots bump up all over the place. And I think because of what happened in Iraq and then Afghanistan, the general public in America has pretty much realized that no matter what the actual on-the-ground issue, it really doesn't matter. We have to figure out a way to solve problems diplomatically without escalation. And so because we're a country that's already looking at two wars and realizing how that's bad financially and politically, the idea of now looking this week and saying, okay, there's maybe another war in Jerusalem, and there's maybe another war in India and Pakistan. That's four wars going on. That's just too many wars.
Way too many wars.
I mean, you don't even have to have a policy to understand that. You just have to be a journal person looking at the television. That's why they're all saying, hey, any escalation of any kind is unacceptable by anybody.
Yeah. We're speaking with Salim Siddiqui from HotConflict.com, and we're going to take you through to the next segment, if that's okay, Salim.
Sure.
Okay. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We're talking about the Israel-Gaza situation, and it's a sticky situation in that we've got Hamas in there in Gaza, who was democratically elected, and this was a major misstep by the Bush administration, and particularly Condoleezza Rice's tenure as Secretary of State. We're going to discuss all of that and take your calls here at 888-7-RADICAL. If you've got a call for Salim Siddiqui regarding Israel and Gaza, let's get on the line. Let's talk about this. That's the only way we can solve the problem. We're back in just a few minutes.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to The Russ Belville Show. RR7, License to Think. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back. It's 35 after the hour. We're speaking with Salim Siddiqui from HotConflict.com, an expert on Middle Eastern affairs. And the big story, of course, is Israel and Gaza. And Salim, thanks for hanging on the line for us.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. Now, Salim, you know, looking at this situation, and I want to remind folks, too, we're taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL if you want to ask a question of Salim Siddiqui. Looking at this situation with Hamas there, in Gaza, firing these rockets into the civilian portions of Israel, what do you think it is that they're trying to express or gain from this action? Because obviously it's getting a lot of them killed.
Well, obviously, being a Muslim, I've got to disclose straight away, the problem that you see in a lot of the Muslim countries is their situations are so poor that they're resulting to violence to get any publicity. You see the same thing in the bombings in India. And terrorism as a methodology is basically an attention getter. It's the worst way to get attention, but unfortunately the world is such a messed up place that that's where we are. That's not a religious excuse. Obviously anybody who uses God to try and kill people is obviously misguided. But we've got a situation where the question that you asked previously was we had democratic elections. And then we got Hamas and we got people we didn't want to exactly work with, and we kind of saw the same thing happen in Iraq and Afghanistan, where we put in new governments, and they weren't exactly what we expected. Mm-hmm. We're seeing democracy taken to places, and we're finding out that when people get democracy, they don't actually decide what we want them to in America. And so democracy's kind of been a challenged concept lately. And really, this is one of the areas where America leads. And for the last year, we've been in a democratic challenge here in America, and the whole world's watching to see, does this thing called democracy still work? And surprisingly, we just had an election where the least likely person just got in, you know? And he's not in yet. I mean, I'm in Houston, Texas, so this is Bush country. I mean, it's Bush 1 country, it's Bush 2 country. And surprising to most people in the States is Muslims are conservative by nature. Their family value, they're conservative by nature, and most Muslims were voting conservative, Republican for George Bush Sr., laissez-faire attitude, laissez-faire foreign policy, and most Muslims even voted for George Bush Jr. But after 9/11, Muslims as a whole became too conservative, right? I mean, we were like conservative extremists now. So from George Bush's first term to his second term, Muslims went from being conservative to liberal all of a sudden because they had no choice.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and it wasn't even an ideological thing, but now we're seeing, and we're waiting to see, is America going to lead a new democracy around the world, and is a new president like Barack Hussein the one to do it? Because the concept of getting along with some of the other countries hasn't worked so far.
Well, we're speaking with Salim Siddiqui from HotConflict.com. Let's go to the phone lines here at 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. We've got Kim in Idaho Falls who has a question for Salim. Kim, go right ahead.
Yes, thank you. Salim, you had mentioned in the last segment that we should go about this diplomatically. I agree. I'm wondering, could you elaborate a little bit? Do you have any ideas or suggestions how we could approach that?
Yeah, thanks for asking the question, Kim. I mean, basically, the concept has been after 9/11 that the administration, you know, took that event and made a global war on terror. And unfortunately, that kind of branded everybody in the whole Middle Eastern world, all one-third of the world, as all the same brush. Now that we're looking back and seeing, okay, there's different issues in Gaza, there's different issues in Iraq, there's different issues in India and Pakistan, we're realizing that politics is mostly local. People have their own local issues, their own economic concerns. If we figure out how to, instead of sending boots on the ground with guns, maybe civil servants, economists, business people, cultural specialists, I mean, how do we make the concept of a new deal, a new world deal, where we changed from arms to butter, offering services and trade instead of a military tactic? Because we've looked at all the terrorist issues as a war, when all the analysts are now realizing we're not fighting an army. It's not the red coats versus the blue coats. Mm-hmm. We're fighting an ideology. And so if we handled it more like a police or a domestic security issue or a terrorism threat instead of a military threat, then we might be able to handle things better. And then reinforced the whole political side of it, like we said, conflict resolution specialists, business, economics, education, and really affect the majority of people in the country so that they're seeing an actual bettering of their condition. In Iraq, for example, you know, we're still hearing that there's no electricity, no water, no infrastructure, and so people are going to blame whoever they think is behind everything, and that seems to be America, who's in charge of the overall policy in the world right now.
Thank you for your call, Kim. I appreciate that question. And Salim, I want to bring this around to the people in Gaza and this election of Hamas. I remember reading that Condoleezza Rice was completely caught off guard, completely surprised by the election of Hamas. She read it while she was working out on the treadmill. She saw it on the crawl on CNN. So that kind of scares me to think that our own Secretary of State wasn't aware of what was going on. But I want to look at the reasons why the people that are in Gaza voted for Hamas. Is this a situation? I know that, like in America, with like kind of the mafia and such, in those neighborhoods, they used to take care of the people. They'd give them turkeys on Thanksgiving and help people out when they needed loans or whatever. Is that a similar situation with Hamas?
Well, the thing with Israel and Palestine is that the organizations there have always had to kind of be doing both things, both civil service, taking care of the people on the street, because there is no actual government. There is no nation. They're kind of on their own administering themselves. So those who have tried to always promote a political agenda in any way, shape, or form, whether it included terrorism, have always realized you have to get the support of the people on the street. And, yeah, obviously the terrorism activity is done out of desperation. And you know, if you talk to the average person, they probably wish that there was peace instead of fighting. But most people in Palestine look at it as a liberation movement, a war that's been going on since the first day, since the creation of Israel, although we've had political stances from various countries and Israel being accepted and not accepted by various nations. The people on the ground still don't have a Palestinian nation or a country, or they don't have any necessary autonomy, and so they're still trying to have some kind of say. How we get through this, and you know, again, it's a religious issue. There's lots of theological issues, and the whole tension with end time prophecy and Armageddon and all the religious rhetoric, all put in together. But at the end of the day, I believe people who are religious should come to a basic conclusion that you don't have to kill each other. It's not a religious requirement. I mean, you can choose peace.
You think,
I mean,
that
God
thou shalt not kill
peace
thing. Yeah,
yeah, God does allow peace. He's actually a just God. Whether you're a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian, it is allowable not to fight. That, as a fundamental, has to start being spread. And I think if we can change the attitude a little bit and say, yes, there's going to continuously be tension in these areas, and there has been for hundreds of years, but it doesn't always have to be tension that is blood-spilling trials and tribulations of Armageddon proportions all the time.
Yeah, completely agreed there, Salim. We're speaking with Salim Siddiqui from HotConflict.com. One more question from the phone lines at 888-7-RADICAL. Matt in Traverse City, Michigan. Matt, go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, Russ. Yeah, I wanted to ask you whether your guest, whether he thought that Ahmadinejad's rhetorical question, why should the Palestinians be made to pay the price for the European Holocaust, have any merit?
Good question. Salim?
Well, thanks for asking the question. I was going to bring it up, but I thought if somebody's going to ask it, let them ask it. The Holocaust question is always the biggest taboo subject, right? And then when you talk about the creation of Israel and the Holocaust, people get into this argument, especially with Ahmadinejad, and whether the Holocaust happened or didn't happen, and nobody with a logical mind is denying that. But what happened was, after the European Holocaust, the creation of Israel was formed, and then you have the situation where the West promoted Israel and has continued to promote Israel as a blanket statement, which is where you opened the issue, Russ, earlier, on whether there's a blanket approval of Israel indefinitely. And this is, again, one of the issues where America, sometimes viewing itself as a Christian country, sees the stability of Israel or even the rebuilding of the Temple of Solomon as a theological Armageddon issue. And so it does get into a lot of touchy subjects, but the issue of the Holocaust is a separate issue to the creation of Israel, and sometimes people like Ahmadinejad don't know how to use their own rhetoric properly, and so the two issues get merged into one big mess, and then people get lost and angry.
Yeah. Well, Salim, thanks for joining us here on this. And, you know, when I think about it, I think the easiest solution would have been in 1948 to just give Florida to the Jews. Just give them Florida. We could have solved our 2000 election problem and the Israel-Palestine in one fell swoop.
They took it anyway, Russ. What's the difference?
They took it anyway. Well, Salim Siddiqui from HotConflict.com, thanks for joining us. I want everyone to check that out, HotConflict.com. We're back in just a couple minutes with the Lunatic Fringe Awards. Stick around.
Despite the existence of Glenn Beck, we still believe in evolution. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. 50 after the hour. I want to remind you to check out the new and improved RadicalRuss.com. Oh my God, it's beautiful. You got to check it out. We've got a live chat widget in the left sidebar. So if you want to let me know something, you got a tip, you got something you want to hear, just put it up on that live in-show comments and I'll see it and mention it here on the show. It's 21st century interaction here on the Russ Belville Show. It's the last segment of the first hour, and you know what time that means. The lunatic is on the grass. Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality. The lunatic is on the grass. From the guano loco neocon chicken hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban. And the cable news punditocracy. The Russ Belville Show presents the Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. Oh, we got plenty of lunatic fringery. We got to get right to it. It's an all-star edition. We're starting off with George W. Bush. That's right. He's still the president for 10 more days. We only got 10 more days to kick him around, so I'm going to take this opportunity. He was at a military ceremony giving kind of a farewell to the armed forces, and he had this to say to all the assembled soldiers.
I thank members of the cabinet, members of the administration, and former members of the cabinet, especially the former Secretary of Defense, who did an outstanding job, Secretary Don Rumsfeld.
Okay. I added that in. They applauded. But yeah, Don Rumsfeld did an outstanding job. Oh, man, the whitewashing of the Bush legacy continues.
Oh, we'll be able to kick him around a little bit more, I think.
You think so? All right, let's go to the heavy hitters here. A lunatic fringe Hall of Famer, Rush Limbaugh, L. Rushbo. That's right. He was talking about the subprime mortgage crisis, and the past, month or two, he's been trying to blame that on Barney Frank. So here he manages to slur Barney Frank and offend ABBA fans at the same time.
Well, it certainly was the way the subprime mortgage thing went down. It certainly was the way Congress was in charge of telling Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac what to do. Barney Frank leading the way, folks. He was and is the banking queen.
You can build, you can buy.
Ah, yes. Barney Frank is the banking queen. That's your level of humor from the right wing. And Rush Limbaugh, the banking queen, offending ABBA fans and homosexuals at the same time. Am I being redundant? I'm not sure. Let's go on. And not to make this any sort of segue, but let's move on to Michael Wiener Savage.
Peter.
Oh, Michael Wiener Savage out in San Francisco had to talk about a transgendered diversity training course.
The San Francisco Police Department is forcing detectives to undergo brainwashing by a transgender detective. Lieutenant Stephen Thorne, that's a female-to-male detective, is facilitating transgender community awareness training. It's a class now to teach normal men how to have sensitivity to a psychopathic sex change operative who should be in a mental hospital. When I worked at a local radio station, they forced the entire staff to take diversity training. I was the only one who challenged the freaks giving the diversity training. I fought them every step of the way.
Boy, that's hard to imagine that Michael Savage would have fought against diversity training in his career.
Surely not.
That's interesting. And again, not to make this any sort of segue, but Ann Coulter was on this TV the other day, and she was promoting her book, her new book, Guilty. She was on the Hannity and Colm show when Colmes had to address her comments about single mothers.
Well, let's talk about your book. How about that?
I would love to.
All right. Now, you talk about single motherhood as like a farm team for future criminals and social outcasts.
Yes.
So you're putting down single mothers.
We have
a term for youngsters involved in children of divorce, as I call them, future strippers.
What I am saying
is... How sensitive
is
of you.
Yes, it's very sensitive. Well, and it's something that needs to be said. What I am saying is there is no better example of victimizers who are treated like victims than single mothers. This was not an accident that the illegitimacy rate has gone up 300% since 1970. This was a plan by liberals.
It was a plan by liberals to increase the number of single moms so that they would raise a generation of future criminals and strippers. Ann Coulter, I would just like to let you know that I have a beautiful niece who's 14 years old and another beautiful niece who's 11 years old who are both being raised by their mother, who is single, divorced from my brother, and I am personally offended by what you just said. Like that means anything, but just had to say it. But they're not our winner
today. Don't forget. Yeah. All the Mexicans that they're giving birth to as well.
Of course, the anchor babies, yes.
Yes.
But she's not our winner. Our winner today goes to the $50 million man. That's right, Glenn Beck, who apparently has lost his gig. He's apparently lost his gig on CNN Headline News. And guess where he's ending up? You got it. Fox News Channel. This is from the promotion for Glenn Beck's new Fox News TV show.
January 19th.
I'm tired of the politics of left and right. It's about right and wrong. We argue back and forth. If you haven't voted for the donkey, you're just a hate monger. The other side, those donkeys trying to turn us into communist Russia. Stop!
So Glenn Beck is tired of the arguing back and forth. He's tired of always people saying, oh, those donkeys are going to turn us into communist Russia. We can't have any more of this name-calling where we call people communists.
The thing that I do find about Barack Obama is that I think America is starting to catch on to this. This guy really is a Marxist.
We are tired of the politics of left and right. We can't argue back and forth and call people names.
Now I got to move from racism to Marxism, and Obama is still in the center of it. Well, hello and welcome back, Karl Marx.
Yeah, we don't want to have people saying, oh, those donkeys trying to turn us into communist Russia.
Okay, that sounds like the Soviet Union. And to top it all off, Comrade Clinton has railed against the excesses of the offensive executive pay packages and an out-of-whack tax code that favors the wealthy while holding down the middle class. I can't imagine anybody putting it more plainly than that. Hillary Clinton is a liberal fascist.
We've got to stop this name-calling in politics.
All the past tax cuts have gone primarily to the rich, and I think it is time... to give some of it to lower income working Americans, because they're going to spend it.
Nice of you to join us, Stalin.
But what about
this redistribution of wealth?
Oh, yes, the other side, those donkeys trying to turn us into communist Russia. We got to stop it.
John Edwards, I listened to him last night give a speech, and why not just start wearing the Soviet star on your head and the Workers' World Party? Good Lord in heaven. Was it a mistake for him to go after her for crying and then also to, join this great Soviet state?
So Glenn Beck, for demonstrating the hypocrisy so grand, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, you are the winner of this week's. Boy. Glenn Beck on Fox News. The world has finally come all the way around. This is the Russ Belville Show. We're back in just a couple minutes.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to The Russ Belville Show.
Thank you.
live and direct from the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hour 2 of the Russ Belville Show. 5 hours a show, 2 hours worth of time to get it in. Glad to have you here. Oh, we're going to be taking your calls here at the bottom of the hour at 888-7-RADICAL. And in this hour, we're going to be discussing the failed ideology of the neoconservatives. The proof is in the pudding. It's in the statistics. We're going to be going over those later on in the show. Before we get to all of that, though, of course, we've got to introduce our man working across the country over there in Washington, D.C., taking your calls, a right cheeky boffin who's such a jammy beggar he smacked his own bonks when he learned he'd be spending a dirty weekend pawing the bristles of a page threer, our own Stevie Webb.
Hello, you dirty beggar.
I have so much fun doing that every week, coming up
excellent.
With those slang.
Excellent. And I noticed you put the bristles of the page three are in there as well.
Oh, yes.
this week.
I forgot the bristles. I got to mention the bristles.
Don't forget the bristles. Were you inspired by when I had my trip to London recently and I brought you back?
Page threes. No, I was actually more inspired by Bristol Palin.
Oh, yeah, it's Bristol's Palin.
Yes, Bristol Palin had her child the other day, and we're going to discuss that, too. A little look at some of the teen pregnancy rates around the country, and you'll find this not too surprising where the highest rates of teen pregnancy occur. We'll get to that a little later on in the show.
See if you can guess, listeners.
Yes. Yeah, just try and guess. In other news here, like some random news, again, I always like to pull up some of these little news tidbits here. I'm thinking back to the 80s. You know, I'm a child of the 80s. I graduated high school in 1985. And around that time, my senior year, there was this really, really popular song on the air. You remember this one?
Now it's solid. Solid as a rock.
Yeah, that's right. Ashford and Simpson. Solid as a rock. Well, on January 20th for the inauguration, Ashford and Simpson will release a single version of this song re-entitled Solid as Barack. Yeah, Solid as Barack.
Ooh.
Yeah, so get ready to hear that a few hundred million thousand times over the next couple of weeks because I bet they're going to play it everywhere. You know, it's one of them things going to stick in your head. You won't be able to get it out.
Let's see what else we can cash in on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so coming up...
Billy Joel will be releasing It's Still Barack and Roll to Me.
It's Still Barack and Roll. we could come up with a million of them.
We really could. We could go on like this for an hour, really.
Oh, yeah. But I want to get to this this topic here for our Living in America segment. So let's talk a little bit about what is going on here in this great country of ours. Neocon progressives like to say that we liberals hate America first. I like to say we liberals love America most. That's why we're so disappointed in how badly regressives trash her reputation and treat her people. So today we help our leaders focus on the plight of the little guy by taking our look at... All right, for Living in America today, I want to talk a little bit about the incoming administration of Barack Obama. And I'm just really starting to wonder here if we just haven't elected Bill Clinton II to the presidency here. You'll remember living through the era of Clinton when it was all about triangulation. It was all about trying to find a third way of being a centrist, a moderate, a reasonable person back in the 90s. I'm beginning to get the feeling that's what we're getting from Barack Obama as well. Now, in the United States Congress, there was most recently one of my favorite things I've ever heard Dick Cheney say.
The state of the vote for President of the United States as delivered to the President of the Senate is as follows. The whole number of electors appointed to vote for President of the United States is 538, of which a majority is 270. Barack Obama of the state of Illinois has received for President of the United States 365 votes.
Now, the reason I want to bring that up is to point out the mandate that Barack Obama got from the American people, and the jury is in. The verdict is final. The neocon conservative Republican agenda does not work. conservative philosophy is dead. It should be buried on the scrap heap along with communism and other failed ideologies from the past. We've got all of the statistics. We've got all the evidence we need to prove that Republican ideas do not work. You guys were in charge 6 straight years, White House, Congress, and then over the past 2 years still had the White House and a pretty much ineffective Congress. So you got everything you wanted, Republicans. Conservatives, you got what you wanted. You wanted to drown the government in a bathtub, right? You want to make it so small you could drown it in a bathtub. You wanted to deregulate everything, get government out of the way. Government is not here to help us. They're the problem, not the solution. I heard these things from the days of Reagan. I've heard it all my life from these Republicans, and now they cannot own up to the fact that their ideology has failed. Let's take a look at the figures. 524,000 jobs lost in December. Unemployment rising to 7.2%. The biggest job loss in any calendar year. We've had 2.6 million jobs lost in 2008. That's the biggest job loss since 1945. The unemployment rate now, 7.2%. The highest it's been since early 1993, after the last Bush left office. And that's just what they're counting, the official unemployment rate at 7.2. They're not counting the people who've been unemployed so long they've given up looking for jobs. They've been unemployed so long they've run out of benefits. They've been unemployed so long they're taking part-time jobs to make the ends meet. They're not even counting those people. And if you did, we're up to around 13 or 14%. We are at a point in America where 1 out of 8 people is either unemployed or underemployed in this country. And it's the result of the conservative ideology. We see another, let me give you just another statistic here. This one, speaking of Bristol Palin, they just came out with the Centers for Disease Control, came out with the report on the highest teen pregnancy rates. And they found that teen pregnancy has gone up across the board, all across America. Teen pregnancy has gone up during the same time the Bush administration is pushing the abstinence-only sex ed, saying to kids, just say no to sex because it works so well with drugs. Just say no. So try and guess what the number one state is for the highest teen pregnancy rates. Let me narrow it down for you. Try and guess whether it's a blue state or a red state. Yeah, a little bit easier to figure then. It's the state of Mississippi, displacing Texas and New Mexico for the title of the highest teen pregnancy rate, over 60% higher than national average. Now, Mississippi is one of these schools, one of these states, that is very strong for this abstinence-only education. They are not required to teach about sex ed or sexually transmitted diseases. If they do, they must stress abstinence until marriage, and they must talk about how contraception can fail and condoms can fail and scare those kids. And what we found out now is that these kids that take these virginity pledges and just say no and abstinence are just as likely to have sex as the kids that don't. Kids that get sex ed, kids that don't get sex ed, they're both just as likely to make the beast with two backs, okay? The difference is the kids that get the sex ed don't get pregnant as much. The kids that get the sex ed don't get sexually transmitted diseases as much. This is another failed ideology of conservatism, this idea that we can deny human nature and that just say no is a reasonable public policy. So what I want to bring this around to with just those two small examples, I could sit here all day and talk about the failures of conservative ideology, but this is what I want to address to the Obama administration. Why do you feel you need to compromise with these people? Why is it that you talked about how we have such a huge emergency that we've got to have a huge stimulus package to take care of this country, but now you're caving in and giving tax cuts away so you can bring more Republicans on board? You're in charge now. You've got the majority in the House. You've got the majority in the Senate. Why do we want to cater to the people whose ideology has failed? Why do we have to compromise with the people who were wrong? This is the same thing that goes up on the mainstream media all the time, where, if side A says one thing and side B says the other, they're both equally valid for the argument, despite the fact that side A has facts and side B is talking out their butt. So Are we compromising too much? Do you see this happening with the Barack Obama administration? Is it like he says he's president of everybody, wants to bring everyone on board? Or do you think that it's just too much? Do you think the Democrats are compromising too much with the Republicans? Because I feel the American people have given a mandate here. The American people aren't stupid. They've realized that the past 6 years of all Republican, 8 years, excuse me, of all Republican rule, and if you go back to Reagan, you know, going back, you know, 30 years of Republican and conservative ideological dominance in this country, the American people figured it out. The American people have had enough. And that's why they voted for Barack Obama. So why is Obama wanting to compromise and work with the people who were wrong? Why do we have to move to the center? Why don't they have to move to our side? Why aren't we forcing them to admit their failures and come to our side? I'd like to know what you think about this. The phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. Are the Democrats compromising too much with the Republicans on these economic issues? We'll take your calls, 888-7-RADICAL, 888-772-3422. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Call now at 1-888-7-RADICAL. We'll even speak slowly for conservatives.
Once I built a railroad, I made it run. Made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?
We have 524,000 jobs lost in the month of December, unemployment rising to 7.2%, economists like Paul Krugman talking about us facing a second Great Depression. We've seen the results of the conservative ideology. We've seen the results of rampant deregulation. Let business get whatever it wants. We've seen the results of the Bush foreign policy that we attack whoever we don't like. We've seen the failures of the conservative ideology. And my question to you, dear listeners, is why are we trying to compromise with these people? Why is Barack Obama trying to get 80 votes when he only needs 60? Why do we need to accommodate the members of the party who were so behind these failed ideologies? I want to take your calls at 888-7-RADICAL. Let's go to the lines right now. I've got Frank in Kansas City, Missouri. Frank, welcome to the show.
Hey, Russ, big fan, but I've got a bone to pick with you. You and a lot of other progressives on the radio and in the media are just now starting to act a little surprised that Obama is coming across like this. The point is, the guy has always made it pretty clear he's been nothing more than a moderate Republican.
Yeah, you know, I guess maybe I was confused because I was listening to all the Republicans tell me he was the biggest liberal in the Senate.
Well, right. And that was the lie they used to...
Da-da-da! So
they could help to pick our nominee for us, and this is what we've got. This guy, right from the beginning, has always said that he wanted to give a seat at the table to the insurance industry in discussing... national health insurance. Why would we ever want to do that after they've been robbing us for decades? You know, and now he's actually going after Social Security, saying he wants to make it the central focus of his economic plan. As so if we gave trillions to Wall Street bankers, and now to make up for that, we're going to have to cut back on Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it's something I think a lot of, you're right, Frank, a lot of people got, you know, behind the whole, you know, change we can believe in and the flowery speeches and stuff.
The greatest single fraud ever perpetrated on this country, this guy is.
I think
we're all going to be paying a huge price for it because this was our time. It was a progressive's time after 8 years of the Bush crime family, as you guys like to say, which I think is great. After 8 years of that, it was our time to recapture the country. Instead, we've elected a moderate Republican.
Yeah, Frank, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. I I'm going to the jury's out for me still. I mean, good Lord, he's only in day negative 10 of his administration, right? He still isn't even in office yet. So I'm going to withhold judgment on the moderate Republican part. But based on what I've seen so far, I've got it right ready to go. Okay, I'm gonna want to see what happens once he gets into office. But so far, I'm not liking what I'm seeing. Let's go out to Chicago now. Our good friend Dave is on the line. Dave, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, what that guy said, I agree with both of you that let's give him a few days, though. Let's see what happens. But I'm right there. The way you started out the show, fabulous. Oh, man.
Thank you.
Way to start out a radio show. There is no reason to compromise with these people. They are never going to change. They are going to continue to be unreasonable. Let me tell you a quick story. I'm going to put this story in the thimble. Last time I talked to you, just hours beforehand, I was assaulted down south. I was wearing a Barack Obama hat, and a guy verbally assaulted me and then physically assaulted me. So I called the police while this guy was taking off in his car, reading the license plate over the phone, okay? So they have it on recording. Then the cop came out, and I gave my report. I told him exactly what happened, exactly what we both said, exactly what everything that happened. So this was December 20th. The cops cannot find this guy. They're saying, oh, the plate just doesn't come up. Let me get this straight. I read to you a plate over the phone as I was looking at it, and this guy takes off. The cop that came out was a big righty, too. So, we can't find this guy, man. I don't know. So I've got a private investigator working on it. I've got a lawyer on it. These guys just think I'm some stupid truck driver. They don't understand that 4 years ago that I heard from people that figured George Bush out 6 years ago, man, you better do something because this guy's going to crash this country into a wall. I sold my house and I put all my money in gold coins. So I have plenty of wherewithal to take this thing to town. So this is going to happen for me, and like you said, there's no reason to compromise with these people. They are the most unreasonable people. They stretch the rules to cosmic levels.
Yeah.
They are never going to change.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dave, for that perspective. And that's something I want to point out, too, here, is that that's just, you know, the basic difference between liberals and conservatives is this difference between authoritarianism and freedom. Right. The conservative ideology is all based on a top down authoritarian structure. And when you have a top down structure like that, you don't question. You don't ask questions. You accept the dogma. You accept what you are told. It folds into the whole religious side of things, too. The evangelical movement that's so strong on this right wing that, you know, God said it. I believe it. That settles it. That's their mantra. Right. So these right wingers aren't going to compromise. They still believe, even after all of this, they still believe the conservative philosophy is correct, that Bush just didn't do it right. Right? No, he did exactly what they wanted to do. He did exactly what conservatives have always been calling for, back to the days of Grover Norquist talking about drowning the government in a bathtub. They are pissed off at the New Deal and FDR, and they can't take it, and they've been wanting to dismantle this for years and years and years. They want to go back to the days of the robber barons, and they certainly brought us there. We're going to take more calls at 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with Sam in New Orleans and other people on the line. Stay tuned. It's the Russ Belville Show.
Touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to the Russ Belville Show. voted Best Progressive Talk Radio Host, named Belleville, for 2 years and counting. This is the Russ Belleville Show. I wonder if there's a typo there.
There are some who call me Tim.
No, there's some that call me Radical Russ, your Red State refugee. Thanks for joining us here on the Russ Belleville Show. We're talking about Barack Obama's seeming capitulation to Republicans in the Senate here, promising them all sorts of new rounds of tax cuts in order to try to get more votes for his economic stimulus package. And my question is this, why? Why do you want to compromise? Why do you want to bring on board the people who were spectacularly wrong? And why do you want to do it with more tax cuts? I mean, haven't we just survived, or we're just barely surviving, the past 8 years of the tax cut, tax cut, tax cut mantra from the Bush administration here? We've seen where it leads. Somebody's got to pay some taxes in order for us to get this economy back on track. And I just want to ask you listeners out there, what do you think? Are we compromising too much with the Republicans? Why do we want to compromise with a failed ideology? Let's go to the phones at 888-7-RADICAL, 888-772-3422. Sam in New Orleans has been holding on quite patiently. And Sam, welcome to the show.
Hi, Russ. I agree with you that Obama seemingly received a very large mandate in this election. However, you know, realigning elections, you can't really tell till years down the line. You know, 1932, 1980 come to mind to me. So it remains to be seen whether or not this is a phenomenon of him as a candidate or whether it is a rejection wholeheartedly of the ideology. Mm. So I think him being the cautious man that he is, that is what he is going to try to do. He's trying to proceed cautiously. I think when you talk about tax cuts, I think the main part of this tax cut that I've heard is going to be the middle class, which is something that he promised during the campaign. And I think that's how he's framing it to the public, that this is one of his campaign promises. And, you know, the Republicans might seem to like it, but I think in the end, you know, we're talking about hundreds of dollars being spent by the government to try to boost the economy. That's thing that no Republican would ever do.
That's true. Well, what I'm worried about here is the caution being employed here, because I'm reading economists like Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize winner, talking about this is too little. This is not bold enough. It's too cautious. And that's what I'm worried about here. And with regards to the tax cuts, yes, I know Obama campaigned on middle class tax cuts, but that's more than what's being included in this plan. He's given away a lot of giveaways to business here. And I think it's just too little. We really, really need some bold action here, don't you think?
No, I agree. I also think, I mean, obviously, we don't know what the final plan is going to look like. And to me, it seems more practical to start with a lower number if you're on the negotiating table, and then move up. And that the American public is going to respond to that a lot better than if Obama had come out and said, I'm going to spend $1.3 trillion, is the highest number I think I've heard, and then have to come down after negotiation. It makes him look weaker right out of the gate, I think.
So it's a political consideration rather than an economic consideration, whereas economically we might need to just go $1.3 trillion right now, but politically speaking, the best he can hope for is to ramp it up slowly. Am I encapsulating that well?
Yeah, because, I mean, also this is basically an unprecedented economic event that we haven't really seen for 70 years, so no one really knows exactly how much money it's going to take. So it's something that I think it's hard to strike that balance between speed, which is necessary, and practicality. And I think Obama has always been cautious as a campaigner, as an elected official. So I think it's something that remains to be seen whether or not his base will accept this. Because, you know, my generation, the younger generation, embraced him wholeheartedly, thinking he was going to bring all this radical change to government. And, you know, is it more a love affair with his speaking ability, or is it more the policy base?
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see, I guess. Sam, thank you for your call. I appreciate your opinion on that. Let's go to the left side of the country, San Jose, California. Mike is on the phone. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here. And, you know, by the way, you're great.
Thank you.
I love listening to you. You know, it's hard to follow up with Sam there, because Sam sort of stole my thunder. I sort of agree with them that it's necessary to sort of be a little bit more cautious.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a political consideration more than an economic consideration.
Okay, well, let's take this to another direction then, since Sam kind of stole your thunder, so to speak. I'm talking in kind of general terms here about compromise with the Republicans who've been proven wrong, and I brought up that stat earlier about teen pregnancy and how we see it in the abstinence-only states. And yet I hear from Barack Obama this talk about continuing the faith-based initiatives and giving money to more of these religious-type organizations that promote such things as abstinence-only education. Talking at the big level there, do you see Obama continuing this? Do you think this is right?
Well, I don't know. I think that he basically has to sort of say that sort of to not come on too strong.
Why? I mean, he won the election. Don't elections have consequences? Didn't we hear that?
Yeah, but unfortunately, the difference in the base is I mean, there's a difference in the nature of the left base and the right base.
Yeah, so that's
for
true.
For example, you know, the left doesn't go out and punch people in the face for wearing, you know, Bush shirts. Like
Dave had, yeah.
So, I mean, it's in terms of getting people to support his position, I'd say generally the left likes to proceed cautiously, or we like to proceed cautiously and in an informed manner, whereas somebody like Bush, who comes out, you know, after he gets elected, he goes, oh, it's a big mandate, you know, it's a 50-50 vote pretty much, you know, I stole Ohio, and, you know, hey,
yeah.
I've been given the mandate to now totally change your way of life and make you conform to ours. It's just a difference in the way, you know, the political, I guess, the political traditions that they come from, you know, operate.
And well, I also think there's a difference between the political leanings of the people versus what's entrenched out there in Washington, D.C. I think the American people are far more liberal and progressive, but then when they vote someone like Obama in and he gets to Washington, he's surrounded by, you know, everybody's, you know, old school. It's all, you know, let's resist change, let's compromise, let's be, you know, let's go slow, let's be cautious. And I'm just worried. I guess I'm just worried, Mike, that this is not the time for caution and compromise.
Well, it's not the time for caution and compromise, but it is the time for action, and the nature of that action should be cautious. If you know, I mean, I hate to go, you know, because if you move too fast, you're going to galvanize, you know, opposition in Washington D.C.
Yeah,
you know, for you, and I think that's what he's sort of trying to do. He wants to keep the minds open, and I think he's sort of depending on us as the people to sort of keep that sort of open mind, keep the hope going, because I think a lot of what will help him sort of move Washington and also some of these other Wall Street types is knowing that, hey, you know, the people actually want, you know, such and such and such and such a change to occur. But to do it, he has to sort of shift the zeitgeist in Washington, D.C., and shift the zeitgeist amongst a lot of these sort of, I mean, super rich power brokers.
Yeah.
Over to the left, and that is a cautious move. It's a gradual shift. It's not a shift that's going to be made quickly.
Well, I hope it's a shift that we see over the next 4 to 8 years. I definitely hope that's the way it goes. And thanks for that opinion, Mike. That's really reasoned opinion there. And I like what you're saying. Still though, boy, I'm just scared here. And again, I want to see these ideologies of conservatism. This idea of just say no, this idea of denying science and exalting religion beyond the private, you know, expression of religion. I want to see real change, and I want to see, like I said, the end of these ideologies, because no one here, if you bring up, you know, a communist view or a socialist view, you're not even taken seriously. You're laughed out of the room if you try to bring up these philosophies. That's what the philosophies of the Bushies need to be now. They need to be laughed out of the room. They need to not even be taken seriously when people bring things up like that. Like, if they bring up privatizing Social Security, it should just be like a non-starter in this country. That's what I think about it. And again, we're going to just have to, you know, see what pans out here in the next 4 to 8 years to see how it really turns out. But boy, I'm really concerned, and I hope things don't have to get a whole lot worse before they get better. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives, reminding you to check out the new RadicalRuss.com. Online chatting, comments, all sorts of fun stuff at RadicalRuss.com. Also, you can send me an email, RadicalRuss@gmail.com. We'll be reading listener emails in our last segment coming up next. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Continue the conversation with Radical Russ online. Visit RadicalRuss.com and email RadicalRuss@gmail.com.
Welcome back to the show. It's 50 after the hour, and got a couple little things to slip in here before we talk about our listener email. This is your Marijuana Minute, a 60-second update of cannabis news in America, brought to you by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws at norml.org. The state of New Mexico has finalized rules that make it the first state in the nation to regulate the sales and distribution of medical marijuana to qualified patients. Nonprofit entities can apply for a license to produce up to 95 marijuana plants and maintain an inventory of marijuana that reflects current patient needs. The move makes New Mexico the third state, following California and Colorado, to allow for the legal sale of marijuana through a dispensary system. Current estimates suggest medical marijuana provides $100 million in sales tax revenue to California alone. Harvard economist Jeffrey Miron notes that a system of taxed and regulated marijuana sales for all adults in America would raise $10 to $14 billion per year. Oh, yeah, and that's something that a lot of people are starting to talk about as well here in America, and that is ending this stupid prohibition on the adult use of cannabis. It's been 70-some-odd years that this has been illegal in this country, but people's minds are starting to change about it. I mentioned earlier in the show about Israel and Gaza when I was talking to Salim Siddiqui, and we were pointing out how Democrats oppose the Israeli offensive and Republicans support it. And yet, up on the Hill, all the Democratic and Republican leaders are completely in support of it. And the question is asked, is there any other issue in American politics where the people are 50-50, but then both the Democrats and the Republicans are on one side? And yes, it's this stupid war on drugs. The people have wised up on this thing and realized it's time to end this stupid war on drugs. But the politicians haven't. They still consider it a third rail. They still consider it something they can't talk about. However, that is starting to change. First of all, from the people, we are seeing the change in the public positions. Opinion polls dating back to 1982 have asked people whether or not they support the idea of taxing and regulating cannabis like we do liquor. You know, like if you can get a Bacardi 151 at the liquor store, why can't you get a little bit of cannabis? In 1982, this was coming up at about 75% of the people opposing that idea. 75-25, right? 3-to-1 opposition. The most recent Zogby polls in 2007 have found that in the United States, it's 49 to 48, with 3% undecided, 49 to 48 in favor of taxing and regulating cannabis. And in the situation we're facing here in America, this is something we really need to start thinking about. First of all, we have got a huge shooting war full of terrorism and decapitations and kidnappings and assassinations going on in Mexico right this minute. And it's starting to spill over the border and make its way into America here. We had over 6,000 people killed in Mexico in these drug wars. So much so now that the City Council of El Paso, Texas, this week on Tuesday, voted unanimously to recommend to the mayor that they call for an end to the war on drugs and begin legalizing drugs. Now, the mayor there in El Paso vetoed that resolution, saying it would be embarrassing. It'd be terribly embarrassing if we were to go to Washington and say that we should end the war on drugs. Embarrassing, even though 50% of the people think we should. In Arizona, the attorney general down there, Terry Goddard, said he'd be willing to consider legalizing marijuana because it would undercut those drug cartels who are making 70% of their funds off of the trafficking of cannabis. And if you cut away 70% of any business's bottom line, it's going to go out of business. So you want to end the Mexican drug war, legalize cannabis in the United States. And this is not some marginal thought anymore. People are more and more beginning to think this. But again, the politicians won't stand up for it. Now, if we look around the states, I'm beginning to think that this is going to be a situation where the states are going to have to take the lead on it. Arnold Schwarzenegger is talking about cutting $2.1 billion from education, when in California, taxed and regulated cannabis would make $1 billion a year. New York's Governor Patterson is talking about slashing budgets. One of these budget slashes would cut by a third the budget for this center that helps victims of child abuse and neglect. The taxing and regulating of cannabis in New York would raise about $620 million per year and be able to fund that child abuse program for about 200 years in a row. Governor Corzine in New Jersey is talking about a budget shortfall and cutting $812 million from the budget, including $15 million in municipal aid, $75 million in educational aid for kindergarten through 12th grade, and $160 million in the state pension fund. New Jersey could make about $225 million a year from taxing and regulating cannabis. And finally, in Pennsylvania, Governor Rendell is talking about tapping some funds, diverting money from a rainy day fund and having a $2 billion budget in deficit in Pennsylvania's budget. Pennsylvania could make $240 million a year from taxing and regulating cannabis. So start talking about it. Start thinking about it, politicians. The American people are way ahead of you on this one. The American people want it legalized. They want their money going to help health care, to help our country, rather than buying some dealer a new Xbox. All right, let's get to your emails here at RadicalRuss@gmail.com.
Help, help, I'm being repressed.
Yes, you're being oppressed. Now, speaking of the topic I was just mentioning, I got an emailer who anonymously emailed me at radicalrust@gmail.com, because that's really brave to be anonymous in an email. But he says, the truth is that most people who want pot legalized only want to smoke it. That's because it's not for medicinal purposes, but as a method for coping with life. These people are incapable of dealing with life on life's terms, so they seek to escape reality by getting stoned. And he continues to talk about how pot smokers are just not able to deal with their emotions, and they're having trouble dealing with life, so they smoke pot, which makes me ask, what the hell is Prozac for? What the hell is Effexor and Celexa and Celebrex and Wellbutrin and all these other pharmaceutical drugs that kill people, that actually cause teenagers to get depressed and suicidal and shoot up the mall or shoot up their school? That's what we're talking about here. People, if you really do believe that people that are using marijuana can't cope with life, how is it different from them using marijuana, something that's natural and kills nobody, versus using one of those pharmaceutical drugs?
What an odd thing to say as well. People who buy marijuana only want to smoke it. No, actually, I was going to ask it to direct a light opera. What?
Well, that's, you know, it's anonymous comments, so what can I say?
Probably,
one more here. Bobby in Oregon writes to us and says, you are so grounded, making more sense than almost anyone else, whether speaking about marijuana or other political issues, such as Harry Reid needing to be replaced. She wanted me to mention something called the White Knot campaign at whitenot.org. That's whitenot.org. It's a peaceful protest about Rick Warren giving the invocation at the inauguration. Check out whitenot.org. And that's about all the time we have here for the Russ Belville Show. Like I am fond of saying, we got 5 hours worth of show and 2 hours to get it in. So thanks for joining us. We'll be back here next weekend, this same time, same channel. Check us out at RadicalRuss.com. I'm out of here. Take care of each other, Americans.
If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing.